Good morning. It is 8:06 on this Wednesday, October 15th. I'm Christine Weller, filling in for Leslie Thatcher on the local news hour. It's 35 degrees right now in Park City. The low today is 32. The high is 51. Over in the Heber area, it's 37 degrees with a high of 57. Low tonight is 29 degrees. Let's turn it over to ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes for a more in-depth weather update.
Happy Wednesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your Wednesday forecast for the Wasatch Back. Get ready for some big changes as another cold front makes its way into the state as we go throughout today. We'll be looking at increasing chances for scattered showers and rumbles of thunder as we go throughout late this morning into the early afternoon hours. And as snow levels drop, we're looking at those snow levels dropping down to about 7,000 feet. So areas above that could see that rain switch over to some heavy snow as we go throughout this afternoon with some accumulations, again, above 7,000 feet. High temperatures before the front moves through will be in the low 50s in the Park City area, will be in the upper 50s in the Heber Valley. Now, as we go into tonight, we'll see the wraparound moisture moving in with that upper level low. That's going to bring in more colder air, but that's also going to keep the chance of scattered showers around. But of course, with temperatures dropping down to around the freezing mark in the Park City area, yes, we're looking at some of those rain showers switching over to snow showers in Park City, and we could even see a chance of a few snowflakes mixing in the Heber Valley with temperatures flirting with the freezing mark. As we go throughout today on Thursday, we'll see off and on chances of scattered snow showers and maybe some rain showers mixed in. Temperatures will only climb into the low 40s in Park City for a high, with highs only around 50 degrees in the Heber Valley. Now, as we get ready to move into your Friday, we're looking at improving conditions. We'll start off with temperatures in the upper 20s to near 30 degrees across the Wasatch Back. So definitely a cold start out there and below freezing. High temperatures during the day, though, rebound with partly cloudy skies. We'll see highs struggling, but should make it to around 50 degrees in Park City. We'll see those highs into the mid to upper 50s in the Heber Valley. Now, here's the good news here. Unlike the past couple of weekends, this weekend, we've got fantastic weather heading our way. Very fall-like out there with lots of sunshine expected both in Park City and in the Heber Valley. We'll see those temperatures again flirting with the freezing mark both Saturday and Sunday morning. But the afternoons, pretty nice and crisp out there with that sunshine. Highs should be into the mid-50s on Saturday in Park City. Highs will be in the low 60s in the Heber Valley. And on Sunday, we're in the low 60s in Park City with highs in the upper 60s for the Heber Valley. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Kane.
Coming up on the local news hour this morning, Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District Executive Director Mike Lurz has an update on the flush index and his work on the Park City Shot Ski. Then Acting Park City Manager Jody Emery and Economic Development Director Chris Eggleton have updates from the council meeting, including the Bonanza Park 5-acre project. And Park City High School mountain bike coach Pete Stoughton previews the state championship race this week. And let's jump into some local news. A judge has blocked construction of a Latter-day Saint temple in the Heber Valley while the Utah Supreme Court weighs in. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports the church is asking the state's highest court to let construction go forward.
Lawyers have been tussling for almost 2 years over plans for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to build a temple in Wasatch County. Last month, a 4th District judge ruled all construction must halt while the Utah Supreme Court hears an appeal over the legality of the development plans. Attorneys for the church, however, are reluctant to accept that ruling. On October 10th, they filed a motion for expedited review with the Supreme Court, arguing the construction delays interfere with church members' freedom to worship and violate the church's property rights. The attorneys also say the delays will add millions of dollars to construction costs. The lawyers want the Supreme Court to vacate the district court's injunction, that is, to let the church resume construction. The church's request is the latest legal salvo in a case that began soon after Wasatch County Council members approved temple plans in November 2023. 4 Heber residents who live across from the proposed temple site on Center Street argued the county council broke the law when it voted to allow the project. The temple is planned for an 18-acre site just east of the Heber city limits. It will be 88,000 square feet with a 210-foot steeple. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Joining me in studio is Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District Executive Director Mike Lurz. Welcome.
Good morning, Christine.
So as Leslie always starts off, we'll start with the flush report. What can you tell us?
Sure. The flush report is an effort that we go through each month to calculate, or at least estimate, the number of visitor nights for the previous month here in the Park City, Snyderville Basin area. So for the month of September, we estimated that there were 196,222 visitor nights for the month, and that's about a 9% increase over September of 24. Huh? So, and we're up year to date, we're, according to our numbers, we're up about 3% on visitor nights. So, yeah, looks good.
Okay. And I know you also track, wastewater surveillance to see what kind of illnesses are going through the community. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so we have two wastewater reclamation facilities here in the Park City area, and there are many others across the state. And there's about 30 in total that participate in what we call the wastewater surveillance program. And we look for the SARS-CoV-2 virus. It all got started back in the pandemic. And the most recent results that we have show that the virus is at a pretty low level in Summit County and in Wasatch County as well. There's one treatment plant that's elevated, and that's the Colville area. But this is much better than what we were seeing a couple weeks ago when we had very high levels of the SARS-CoV-2 genetic material in the wastewater. So things are looking up.
Okay. And what about flu numbers? Do you track those at all?
We do not track flu numbers, but we are now including surveillance of measles. And so far, we have not had any positive tests at our wastewater treatment facilities.
And that comes after, I know there was a positive result in Colville back in the beginning of September, so nothing since then?
Nothing since September for us. Other parts of the state are seeing numbers, but, we're okay so far.
Great. And I know the Water District is working on a project this week to install new pipe. Tell us a little more about where that project is and kind of what traffic impacts there might
be. Sure. So the folks that live in the Jeremy Ranch area will have noticed for the last couple weeks that we have equipment within the neighborhood. And this is where we are installing a new pipe inside an existing pipe. Think of kind of like a flexible cloth, heavy cloth that is impregnated with fiberglass type resin. And we put that down into the existing wastewater lines, and we blow it up and heat it up, and it hardens in place. So while it's disruptive while we're doing that, it's a very quick process compared to, digging up the roads and digging up everybody's driveway to install a new line. Just want to remind the folks that live in the Jeremy Ranch area that we will continue to work this week from about 7 a.m. to as late as 7 p.m., depending on weather, to try to complete all this work, hopefully by the end of the week. If not, we'll wrap it up next week. So we appreciate the patience of everyone in the Jeremy Ranch area, and we're making good progress.
Great. And I also wanted to highlight something you mentioned that's a common problem this time of year, sewer odors in drains. Can you tell us a little more about that?
I've mentioned this before, but it continues to be a problem. And this is where we get calls and say, hey, I smell, kind of sewer gas in my home. What's going on? And more times than not, it's usually the result of a floor drain or a shower or a sink that is not used very often in the little what we call the P-trap up underneath the sink or the floor has dried up. And when the water in that P-trap, which is kind of a U-shaped piece of pipe, dries up, it allows sewer gases to enter the home. So, every couple months, run around your house, and if you have a utility room or a bathroom or a shower, a bathtub that's not used, just run the water for a couple seconds, and that'll replenish the water in that P-trap and prevent the sewer gases from entering your home.
Great. And I also wanted to highlight some awards that the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District received this summer. Can you talk a little bit more about those two awards?
Sure. So the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District received two awards. These are national awards for perfect compliance with all environmental rules and regulations at the two facilities. The good news is that our East Canyon facility, we've had 21 consecutive years of 100% compliance with all environmental rules and regulations. And our Silver Creek facility across town had 22 years of consecutive perfect compliance. And that's really kudos to the men and women who operate these facilities. It can be very, very difficult, especially when we have these changeover in seasons. What I mean by that is, you know, before ski season, while we might have some people here, you know, the day ski season starts, the number of people in town dramatically increases. And that makes it very hard for us to meet our permit requirements at our treatment facilities, because you got this sudden surge of additional wastewater coming through the plant, and our treatment plants are biological in nature, meaning they have living organisms in them, and we have to grow additional organisms to treat that additional wastewater, and that takes some real skill and effort on our behalf. And again, kudos to our staff for perfect compliance, and just shows that they, you know, really care about the health of the community and protect the local environment.
Yeah. Can you speak to more about what kind of environmental requirements there are?
Sure. So what treatment plants do are treat everything that people flush. And the first thing that we are given the responsibility to take care of is to protect human health. You know, we don't want raw wastewater running down streets and creeks and whatnot. So the first goal and first responsibility we have is to protect human health. And then the second is to protect our local environment. So by meeting all of our standards, we protect human health and we protect our local mountain streams. Everything that is flushed is removed, and the water goes into East Canyon Creek or Silver Creek and flows downstream to the next, users. So they do a very good job in doing that. And the test results include everything from what we call biological oxygen demand to make sure that there's enough oxygen in the stream. Biological includes phosphorus and nitrogen, so you don't have too much nutrients going in the stream. And then certainly all the bacterial and viral components of wastewater, including the SARS-CoV-2 virus. We use ultraviolet light at a very high level to destroy the genetic DNA of these pathogens, and that helps protect the humans and protect the stream by destroying those pathogens before that water enters the local streams.
Okay. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on related to the water district?
Oh, no, that's good.
Okay. I also wanted to bring up the Park City Shot Ski event. You're a co-founder of the event, and just wanted to touch on how it went this weekend.
Well, I'm a member of the Sunrise Rotary Club, and I was also, as you mentioned, the co-founder of the Shot Ski event that we started some 9 years ago. So once again, we were very successful. We set a new world record at 1,410 shots being taken on Main Street. We had almost 580 skis all bolted together. So it's up to Breckenridge now to see if they can beat us. But I do want to take a moment here to thank the volunteers from the community that helped with this event. And while we have many volunteers from our Sunrise Rotary Club, many volunteers that are not Rotarians stepped up to help, and we couldn't do it without them. It takes about 150 volunteers to pull this event off, and, you know, kudos to all the volunteers, and kudos to the community members that purchased the sponsor skis. That really helps us make this a financial success, and then certainly our principal sponsor, which is High West. High West is more than generous with us on this event. And all the money that we raise, 100% of it goes right back into the community, to the nonprofits. We don't take a single penny out for any kind of, club operating cost or any of those kind of things. All the net proceeds from the event goes to the charitable local organizations.
Yeah, and I think around $70,000 was raised.
We grossed about $70,000, again, kudos to everyone for their assistance.
Yeah, and I hear that the planning kind of already starts again, and that you've already got a date set for next year's shot ski.
We do, and just like any of these big events, we're already receiving feedback from all the volunteers and the organizing committee. We always have a debrief to talk about any issues that we might have had and how we can improve it. every year we do improve it, and we are now in need of additional skis for next year. And while we reuse the general skis, all the sponsor skis, those are taken home by the folks that have purchased them. So we usually need about 50 pair to 60 pair of new skis every year. So we'll collect those and break them down and prepare them for the event. So yeah, it's a year-long effort all in total.
All right. Anything else you think we should know?
No. Again, appreciate everyone who participated in the Shotski event, and we look to see you next year.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District Executive Director Mike Lurs. A vote on whether to incorporate a new town in Summit County will not happen. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports a judge has blocked West Hills for now.
Less than a month before the November 4th election, a third district judge has stopped a vote on what could have been Summit County's newest town. Judge Matthew Bates' Tuesday morning ruling sides with nearby landowners who opposed incorporating West Hills between Camas and Hideout. The decision's a reversal for Bates, who previously said he would not act until after the election, and then only if voters chose to incorporate. It follows an October 1st final plea from the 10 landowners, who sued to stop the election, citing the court's duty to settle election-related issues before a vote. They also say overturning a successful incorporation after the fact would cause practical questions for all involved. Ballots have already been printed and mailed, but what the estimated 47 voters within the 3,600-acre proposed boundaries select may no longer matter. KPCW has reached out to the Summit County Clerk's Office for information on what happens to the invalidated ballots once they are cast. Town sponsor and Salt Lake-based attorney Derek Anderson says the town's proponents have followed Utah law and statutes and will most likely appeal the decision. He said in a statement, quote, "Proponents have merely asked for flexibility on their land, only to be chastised and slandered by outsiders with an agenda to stifle property rights." While town boosters have hoped for modest new growth, the opponents question the feasibility of a new town and claim it will take away from the Camas Valley's rural character. The plaintiffs who sued to stop West Hills are a mix of primary and part-time residents. One is Virginian Jen McCaffrey, a former resident whose property is on the northern tip of West Hills.
We are very pleased with the judge's ruling. It's protecting our constitutional rights of not only the plaintiffs, but others. And so we are very pleased with that, and we'll want to see what will happen next.
The opponents had argued that parts of Utah incorporation law were unconstitutional because they were treated differently from their neighbors. Bates agreed. However, he also noted that those portions of the law have changed. One of the plaintiff's attorneys, Michael Judd, is a shareholder at Parsons Bailey and Latimer, a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
And after an independent investigation into the Wasatch County Sheriff's Office, county leaders are revising the rules for the commission that oversees Sheriff's Office policies. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports.
Retired Judge Richard McKelvey spent months investigating allegations of mismanagement and retaliation in the Wasatch County Sheriff's Office. One of the findings of his report, published September 19th, was problems with the county's Deputy Sheriff's Merit Commission. The Merit Commission system is meant to ensure fair hiring, promotion, and discipline in the sheriff's office. McKelvey wrote that Sheriff Jared Rigby created a three-person merit commission in 2019, but after that, the commission did not function as state law requires. He wrote all three original members were still on the commission at the time of his investigation, despite term limits mandated by law. On Wednesday, the Wasatch County Council will discuss revisions to the Merit Commission system. The revisions include recommending that the group regularly report back to county leaders. The changes would also enable the commission to make decisions as long as two out of the three are present. Previously, all three members were required for a vote. Wasatch County accepted applications this fall for an opening on the commission after one of the three members resigned. A new commissioner has not yet been chosen. Also, at Wednesday's county council meeting, leaders will vote on a formal disciplinary process for county employees. The meeting begins at 4 p.m. in the county administration building. For an agenda and a link to attend online, visit kpcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
And in the studio with me, I've got Acting Park City Manager Jody Emery and Economic Development Director Chris Eggleton. They've got updates from the council meeting last night, including the Bonanza Park 5-acre project. Welcome, both of you.
Good morning. Good morning, Christine.
All right. So on Monday, the Park City Council held a fourth work session with Bryn Shore Development. The firm selected to develop the vacant 5-acre parcel at the intersection of Bonanza Drive and Kearns Boulevard. Chris, where does the current design stand following Monday's meeting? And can you give us a rough idea of what that project would look like?
Sure. The Bonanza 5-acre project has been on a very long journey. And today, I think we're actually further along than we've ever been before. I always like to remind a lot of people, having spent 20 years in real estate development, that designing a building or designing a place is much more than just the development itself. Real estate and real estate development is a tool to deliver community benefits, and it really is about creating a place that adds lasting value. I'd like to have a little fun here. Jody, what is one of your favorite places in town?
Oh.
Or Christine?
Ooh, that's tough for me because I don't live up here.
Name any place.
I would say Main Street and probably the library area.
Yeah.
Probably two places.
How tall is the building? Don't know, and that's probably because they all vary, and many times it's less about the size of the building and the type of fixtures we have. It's more about how we spend time in those places. Mm-hmm. That's what actually creates lasting memory, right, Christine?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So I think, although land management code and designing buildings is really important, at the heart of this project is a concept that we're calling a third place. And that's really spaces beyond home and work. It's a place that we can come together to create a social hub and bring the community together. And that's really what Bryn Shore and GTS have brought forward. And so we can talk a little bit about where it's at, but at the heart is this mountain town village, and it's anchored by a central open space that'll have arts and cultural programming, and it'll be a family-friendly environment. And the mixed use of housing and retail actually creates a lot of interesting opportunities. So on the ground floor, you realize it's not just a retail vision, it's about shops. It's about creating these third areas that we can that act as community hubs, beyond work, beyond school, places we come together. So cafes, bookstores, small shops, and family-friendly services. And at the heart of all this is multidisciplinary art space that's about 1,800 square feet that can bring a variety of different individuals and organizations together. Performances, workshops, classes, everything from cultural events. These elements transform this mixed-use retail and cultural development into a welcoming, social, and experimental area that we can all come together. So if you have some questions, we can talk a little bit about where the actual project designs are. I can share a little bit about how they might be financing it. What would you like me to?
I am interested in finance, how the project will be financed. I know that the council expressed some concerns surrounding the ability to utilize low-income housing tax credits. Are tax credits necessary to move the project forward, or what's that looking like?
The answer is more than likely, but all projects are just going to take money. So tax credits are a form of money that Bryn Shore is bringing to the project to avoid actually having to spend more city money. And so when we can actually take these low-income housing tax credits, you end up having Bryn Shore that's able to sell these credits off that they're awarded from the state government to get money in lieu of. And then whoever buys those credits, large businesses, finance companies, can actually reduce their tax burden. So those tax credits are like coupons, but it's effectively giving free money back to the project that doesn't come out of either the Park City municipal budget or the developer's budget.
Okay. What about the underground parking at the site? I know that the council was considering a 1 or 2-story garage. Do you know where they stand on that issue?
Yeah, they're still discussing that. I think if you imagine what we were trying to build on top, I mentioned some of the third place spaces and the commercial retail. But the residential concept includes, right now, 112 housing units with affordability across 40 to 80% of AMI and then a small number of market rate units. And so when you think about trying to park all of this, the current parking plan would allow a 1-story parking garage that has about 300 stalls. But if we were to dig a little bit deeper, we could get down to approximately 500 stalls, give or take. But the big challenge there is trying to identify what's the best outcome for that. The project doesn't necessarily need all that parking, but the area could use some of that parking. The question that has to be answered is really, what's the strategy that would justify paying for and building that extra parking today?
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And as far as the artist space, Does the city plan to work with local organizations to include that part of the project? Do you know about anything about that?
Yeah, I would say that definitely. And again, with the public-private partnership with Brinshaw and GTS, they've been out and active in the community. I would say that at this point in time, the city has engaged and had conversations as we're in the design and iteration phase to say, what do we think the community needs? And so the city and the developer have spoken with Arts Council, which sort of serves as a region-wide nonprofit organization that's in the middle of its planning phase to say, like, what are the missing gaps in our arts and culture inventory? And so they've been really instrumental and helpful in sort of helping the actual amount of space designed within the project meet some existing small gaps that are within the larger community.
Okay, and will there be any future opportunities for public input on the project?
There will be.
Yeah, we have two coming up.
Yeah, there's already been some public input, and that's been great. It's been really wonderful to hear from the community about where this project stands. But the next opportunity the public has is gonna be an open house on October 20th at the library community room. And there's two times that the community can come and take a look at the current designs and give feedback. The first session is going to be between 1 and 2 p.m. And the second session is going to be between 5 and 6:30 p.m. Again, that's October 20th at the library community room.
Great. And tomorrow, the city council will meet again on the work session agenda. Our proposed code changes for waste and recycling requirements for local businesses and waste haulers. Jody, what do these changes entail?
Well, it's interesting that businesses in Park City are actually not required to maintain waste and recycling accounts. We haven't asked for proof of that, which has unfortunately led to some illegal dumping and low diversion rates. So this is a proposal to make some changes to our code, hoping to update the city code to require all waste haulers to register with the city and also for businesses to hold active waste and recycling accounts. So far, we've gathered feedback from the HPCA, the resorts, and actually the haulers as well. And again, the goal is to improve diversion, to reduce illegal dumping, and to ensure some consistency in commercial waste and recycling practices.
Okay, and will there be any update on Recycle Utah's future in that conversation?
I have heard from a very solid source that you should be hearing an announcement later today, actually.
Okay.
And we're really looking forward to talking a little bit more about how the city, the county, and Recycle Utah are combining forces. So stay tuned.
Okay, we will. Mm-hmm. And as part of the consent agenda, the council will consider approving two agreements with the Park City Historical Society. One of these involves $200,000 for the restoration of the Thames Mine Complex. What can you tell us about this project and what the city's working relationship with this group is?
Yeah, we have a wonderful working relationship. This is with the Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History. It's a $200,000 project for that Thames Mine restoration. If you remember, the Thames Mine was severely damaged in that large snow year we had a couple years ago. Pretty much lost all of the roof. I went up and toured it recently. And it needs some work. So this $200,000 project is fully funded by the 2025 Summit County Restaurant Tax Grant. And they'll be restoring the structures at the Thames Mine, including the hoist house, the ore shed, and the shaft tower. That's the old skier subway. So it's a really interesting part of our history, and we think it's really valuable work to be done. And it builds on the success of the Silver King Mine. I don't know if anybody's had a chance to see that. That building is looking amazing right now. And they're hoping to open the Thames Mine for guided public tours in 2027. And we're really just looking to preserve Park City's mining history and add to the heritage tourism that we have, and we appreciate here.
Great. And as far as the regular agenda, the council will look at appropriating over $750,000 for the Engine House Affordable Housing Project. That's set to be completed in the coming months. What does the funding have to do with for this?
Well, it's to cover dump fee costs. They're asking for additional money for some dump fee costs that that were unforeseen adjustments in soil removal requirements. It was very unique to this project. It just was a timing issue. So they're looking to cover some of those costs. The cost benefit, so in exchange, the city would be gaining a right of first refusal for 3 market rate units that would give city employees early access to housing opportunities. So we see this as a great opportunity for to keep the project moving forward, but also expanding affordable housing access.
Okay. Do you have any updates on the progress with that project since it is supposed to be completed in the next few months?
I believe we're on track to complete in December, I believe. Is that right, Chris?
Yeah. A couple of city staff and council went through and took a tour earlier, or at the end of September, and everything's moving quickly. I think they're right at the final stage when you walk a construction site and you feel like it's never going to make it, but they've got a lot of people on site and they're targeting a late December opening.
Late December.
Okay, sounds good. And lastly, the council will review a new study analyzing operational and capital elements of the municipal golf course. What can we expect to learn from this, and how will it impact the long-term plan for any course renovations?
So we had a consultant, True Cubs Club Solutions, and they are going to present their analysis. The study is looking at the long-term sustainability of the municipal golf course operations and looking at future investment needs. So the takeaways from this will be this is the first step in evaluating how the golf course can remain financially viable and continue to serve both residents and visitors. So the council discussion will focus on long-term capital improvements to the golf course, so the needs around infrastructure. They'll be looking at long-term capital replacement, so golf carts and mowers, and then also operations and fees.
Okay, and I know that the council recently approved something to put up a net around the golf course, mm-hmm. and that's all been implemented, right?
I believe that work is still ongoing.
I don't believe the nets have been installed.
Correct.
Just yet. But
yeah,
the Thames Pathway Trail system, we did a big ribbon cutting or ribbon riding through. They rode the bikes through. It was kind of a fun event. So still in progress.
Still in progress.
Okay.
Yeah. Ready for next year, I would assume.
Perfect. Anything else you think we should know about the council meeting or anything that's been going on in the city?
No, we would just love to have public input at that October 20th open house. Again, there's 2 options, 1 to 2 and 5 to 6:30, and we'd love the public to come out. We appreciate all the feedback we've gotten and look forward to more.
Okay. Anything else from you, Chris?
No, I agree. There's going to be a July sales tax report, which is always exciting for those of us who love numbers. So,
yeah.
Come on out.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Christy.
We've been speaking with Park City Manager Jody Emery and Economic Development Director Chris Eggleton. The snow has started to fly in Utah's higher elevations, and soon skiers and riders will be chasing powder. Before the ski season, Summit County and the Utah Avalanche Center want snow enthusiasts to know how to stay safe in the backcountry with a free class next week. The free avalanche awareness introduction from the Utah Avalanche Center and the nonprofit Know Before You Go will give residents the opportunity to brush up on their backcountry safety or get started. The Know Before You Go presentation is an hour-long interactive class for anyone interested in learning about avalanches. The free presentation on October 23rd will be at the Sheldon Richens Auditorium in Kimball Junction below the Summit County Library from 6 p.m. to 7. And Summit County says staff shortages at its Colville and Camas DMV locations have led to unexpected closures in recent weeks. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports more shutdowns are expected through the end of October.
Department of Motor Vehicles branches in Colville and Camas are scheduling several closures in advance while they look to hire another employee. According to Treasurer Corey Forsling, Summit County has just 3 employees to staff its 3 DMVs.
So we're struggling a bit to identify a new candidate for our 4th spot because of the nature of trying to staff 3 offices with 4 employees. with one person gone, if one other person has to be out, sick, doctor's appointment, childcare, for any reason whatsoever, we have to close an office.
That's led to some last-minute closures this year, which she admits is frustrating for residents trying to visit the DMV during the workday. Camas's location is usually open Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Colville's is open Tuesday and Friday. The Park City location in Kimball Junction is Monday through Friday. According to spokesperson Bridget Noble, Summit County is not considering consolidating the DMVs right now. The vacancy follows the departure of a longtime employee whose replacement did not stay long. One of the position's minimum requirements is bilingual proficiency in Spanish and English. Forsling says it takes several weeks to hire and fully train a new employee, so there are several closures planned in advance to reduce uncertainty. Those are listed at kpcw.org. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
And drivers can expect overnight delays as UDOT starts widening US 189 in Wasatch County. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has details about the project.
The Utah Department of Transportation plans to widen US 189 to two lanes in each direction past Deer Creek Reservoir. UDOT says the added lanes will improve safety and reduce traffic delays. The widening project begins with overnight work on the stretch of highway from the Rainbow Bay Day Use Area to the intersection with State Route 113. Crews will work nightly to get the area ready for excavation through November 7th. Flaggers will move traffic through a single lane during construction. Drivers can expect alternating one-lane traffic from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. on weeknights, 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. on Saturdays, and 10 p.m. to 9 a.m. on Sundays. UDOT says people driving through the construction area overnight can expect delays of up to 15 minutes. Later in the project, UDOT will construct two new lanes on the hillside above the existing road that will separate both directions of traffic, preventing head-on collisions. UDOT will also add a traffic light at the intersection of 189 and State Route 113. The project is expected to take about 2 years to complete. For details about the project, visit kpcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Crews have completed preliminary work on High Valley Transit State Route 224 Bus Rapid Transit Project. The construction included improving drainage and utilities, as well as removing large medians between Sun Peak Drive and White Pine Canyon Road. High Valley Transit says electrical crews will keep working through the end of November to finish signal work. Next spring, Route 224 will be widened to add two extra bus lanes. In Park City, Homestead Road has reopened to local traffic as crews put the final touches on the project. Residents will have access to the road while work wraps on the new sidewalks and multi-use trail. Work will continue through the end of November. In the spring, landscaping with planters, grasses, and trees will be added. And Park City High School has just cut the ribbon on its latest phase of construction. Jorge Casarubias was one of about 70 staff and community members who got a first look at the completed Park City High School expansion Friday. He's a former student who wanted to check out the new wings with his family.
I graduated back in 2015, and so I saw this on Facebook, and I was very curious to check it out, and I wish I was back in high school now just to experience all this.
The Park City High School opened its career and technical education wing in fall 2024, and most recently unveiled the connecting wing to the CTE area. Now fully integrated with the school, its offerings have continued to expand, including in aviation, culinary, and nursing disciplines. And the new wing also features large glass sliding doors in every classroom, whiteboard tables, gathering places in the hallways, and gender-neutral restrooms. The latest phase of construction at the high school is complete, and more is on the horizon. The Park City School District plans to revamp the Dozier football field with a new track next year. Accessory buildings for concessions and locker rooms will also be added. And on the phone with me, I've got Park City High School's mountain bike coach, Pete Stoughton. He's here to preview the state championship race this week. Thanks so much for joining us. First, let's talk a little bit about this season so far. How have the regional races been for the team?
The regional races have been fun. We've had to travel for all of those, which is, you know, always interesting to see the different courses throughout the state. And we have done well at those regional races. Our team has good competition in Weber and Davis, but we took first place each time. And we've grown as a team and learned a little bit about how deep our varsity boys are and seen some really exciting new riders. And as usual, our girls are a really strong group. So it's been fun getting to see kind of them all showcase their skills throughout the season and develop.
I know you've mentioned before that the varsity boys team is the best it's been since 2015. Can you talk a little bit more about why that is and kind of what sticks out to you with them?
Yeah, so this is perhaps our deepest varsity boys group that we've ever had. As far as their speed, their break-in course records, and they're sometimes, you know, almost completely sweeping the varsity podiums and region. And then right on their tails are, you know, four more after that. So that's you know, a big accomplishment in itself. But, you know, when one has a mechanical or, you know, is having a bad day, it's really interesting and fun to watch that these guys are, you know, the next one's up and the next one takes up that position, and they're supporting each other. They're cheering each other on, and they're really excited to see what that'll look like as they culminate this weekend. So 2015, we had a really great group of boys. Similarly, they would trade out, you know, who was podiuming at different times. And we won state champs that year, you know, still largely because of folks like Haley Batten, but the boys were big contributors.
Okay. So the state championship is coming up later this week. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Well, it's a showcase of what NICA brings to the state. So there's about 7,500 riders, and then they bring out the top in each division, the top 40 from each region or the top 25 from each region to compete against the other regions. So that's where it's a little different than other sports where there's 2A, 3A, 4A, 5A, where they still, when they go to states, they still compete against the folks in that category. Here, we compete against Corner Canyon, we compete against Skyline, we compete against all the other bigger schools, as well as smaller schools. And they do have a Division I, Division II, but that's based on how large your team is. And we compete against, you know, those big schools because we have a really strong bike community here and our team's pretty large. So we'll toe the line with all of the other schools, and each region puts one person forward. So they're first place, second place, third place, and each region has their first fastest rider, second fastest, and third, and so forth and so on. And we'll be down in Cedar City, which last year had a snowstorm, but weather's looking good. We got some of the rain out. We went for a ride yesterday. The kids were cold and wet, but we were grateful because we were hoping that's the extent of the cold and wet that we face in the next week. So,
okay. And which athletes should the community be looking out for at this state championship?
Well, I mean, again, we're taking about 58 riders. Some aren't able to join us. And as usual, you know, with Park City, we have, again, strong female team. So there's some really exciting girls to keep your eye on. Izzy Crandall and Greta Kirby are varsity riders. And then Harley Dieters, who is tearing stuff up. It looks like, you know, she'll have a strong opportunity to compete at the state level in JBA. And then also, you know, our varsity boys, keep an eye on them. We've got 10 deep that are really solid. We've got Cohen Flack, Kyle Clark, Chris Bigelow, Tanner Antonori, Jackson Carlson, and those seniors are really showcasing their many years of commitment and growth, and we're excited to see how they do on an Oscar Stadelmeyer. Sorry, I forgot that one. He's really had a great season. So we're really excited to see some of these senior guys showcase their skills.
And are all of those planning on doing, I think you said they're planning on doing exceptionally well, or they're set to do exceptionally well. What kind of performances have they had so far this season?
All of those boys have been top 10 pretty much for the most part of the season there in our region. And I would have to argue, but proof's in the pudding. On Saturday, we have a pretty strong region for varsity boys. So, I would definitely hope to see. I think all of those guys might, if there's no mechanicals and so forth, have a good shot of being in the top 30 in the state. So.
Okay. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit more about what kind of training these kids undergo throughout the season, since they are doing so well.
Yeah. Well, and with mountain biking and with a lot of endurance sports, it's a lot of the training they did last year, which is paying off. So they have really been putting down many years of training, many years of just putting time on the bike and building their endurance over the long haul. So for those guys, it's certainly not like, hey, I'm just going to pick it up. They're not coming to race and they just started in June. It's pretty impressive. They've really grown even since they were eighth graders, but last year especially, they put a lot of time on bike. I would anticipate, most of these guys are putting 15 plus hours on a bike every week. And they can easily ride for 30 to 50 miles without batting an eye. They're really strong riders, and they're still having fun. They're able to keep a good head about them and about the riding. We ride. They'll be riding through early spring all the way to now, and they'll take breaks during different periods of times, but they'll be riding pretty much from March all the way to now. It's a long season to prepare.
Okay. Anything else you think we should know?
No, I mean, just keep your wheels turning and thinking about these kids, and hopefully we'll come back and be able to celebrate all their hard work.
All right, and that state championship is October 16th and 17th. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Park City High School mountain bike coach Pete Stoughton. Summit County is preparing to renovate buildings new and old in Kimball Junction and Colville. KPCW's Connor Thomas has more from County Manager Shane Scott's proposed 2026 budget.
Summit County's draft fiscal year 2026 budget is nearly $100 million, an all-time high. The Summit County Council has until December to vote on it, but discussions begin this week. Here's Summit County Manager Shane Scott, whose job it is to propose the budget annually.
This year is an opportunity for us to really catch up. It's really to reflect. We've asked staff over the last 2 years to hold off on some full-time employees, for example.
Scott has proposed a property tax increase the past 2 years running, but county council members decided not to go that route. This year, he's not recommending a tax increase. That's because there's more money to go around. Since voters approved a 0.5% sales tax last November, county staff projected to bring an additional $16.5 million annually. Those funds are earmarked by law for emergency services and waste management, but it also frees up money for other purposes. County departments requested 16 new employees. The proposed budget has room for 8. Scott has also been overseeing a process to plan future facility renovations and building needs.
And this budget is a reflection of that.
Following the initial presentation of the budget Wednesday, October 15th, the county council will have weekly focused discussions about different areas of the budget through November. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
And St. Luke's Episcopal Church of Park City is selling its historic chapel in Old Town. The chapel opened in 1901 and received a historic designation from the Park City Historic Commission in 1988. The location on Park Avenue was home to the congregation until 1996, when they moved to a larger campus on Silver Springs Drive to accommodate growth. Now St. Luke's Church buildings need an upgrade. Proceeds from the sale of the Old Town Chapel will go toward the modernization and expansion of church facilities. Rector of St. Luke's, Reverend Ashley Wright, hopes the new owner will cherish the chapel's significance and historic position in the community. St. Luke's will host a series of farewell events to celebrate the chapel's legacy later this year.